Joseph, what are you doing with that chainsaw? Joseph, what are you doing with the chainsaw?
Oh, hey, Casey. I couldn't find my angle grinder, but don't worry, I got this.
But I've been getting there. It's just the past couple of months has made life an interesting out of the box experience.
Mm.
And so we're kind of back to let's freestyle everything, right?
Okay. Yep.
And so I've been thinking about all the things that I hadn't thought about in a while that's very entrepreneurial. What blog should I come up with? So I've got a new YouTube channel name that I want to start that I'm not going to do. I've never started a YouTube channel before.
Oh, man.
I'm not ever going to do this, but that name I love, which is Angle Grinding Overhead. That's what I want to name the channel, and I want,
like that.
I want it to be...
Is it about metalwork?
It's good. What I want it to be about is all of my at-home experiences with rebuilding a home, mm-hmm. and how often I use the angle grinder in all overhead. The ways I'm not supposed to.
Oh, yeah.
But I love... I mean, it's one of my favorite tools. It's so useful.
I just got one.
Oh.
I finally made an excuse for it because Henry's Halloween costume.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to be... This is for the listener's benefit. He's already heard all about this. But he wanted to be Luke Skywalker in the X-Wing pilot outfit specifically, which is great. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up doing, we improvised the whole thing, but I did look at an Instructables that someone had posted about a helmet. I didn't use much of what they said, but they used a kid's baseball helmet for the helmet and then added onto it. And that's what I did. But you have to take the brim off. There's a brim on the front of it and you have to take that off.
Yeah.
I was going to go at it a couple different ways. And then I turned the page and I was like, we just need to get an angle grinder. We just have to. We don't have a choice. Look, we got Halloween's coming up. We got a deadline in front of us. You know, got
to do it.
It's like whenever I want a tool, I can usually get away with buying literally anything at any price, as long as I either have a real or artificial deadline that we're up against.
Right.
And then no one talks about the cost. It's just like it's gonna rain.
It's gonna rain,
and we don't have this thing. And
are the artificial deadlines often self-imposed by you?
And she knows.
Yeah.
But she just totally plays along.
Yeah.
Because she gets into getting a new tool as much as I do. So she'll just be like, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
How else would we take that? And you know, I will say a baseball helmet is a very sturdy piece of plastic.
Yeah.
And if I had been out there, I'd still be out there with a coping saw trying to cut that thing off right now. But big fan. Also big fan of construction YouTube of any variety.
I know, right? Before we move off of the subject of angle grinders, though, I want to know. Harbor Freight?
No, Milwaukee.
You went
Home
Big
Depot.
Wheels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? Let's try out that Hart Tools Walmart brand, which is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Yeah, but then because we were going to Walmart anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all under duress or whatever. But then I was like, no, I'm way too deeply invested in the... It's just the batteries. I'm not even that much of a brand loyalist.
It's just the ecosystem.
I'm so invested in the batteries. I'm like, no, I don't want to get the angle grinder out and the battery go dead and be like, oh, I don't have a spare battery. Or I go to swap batteries from one tool to the next. I'm like, oh, but that's on that other bat. No, I just want all one battery system.
My life hack on that, which may actually just be me wasting money, I don't know, is that I buy semi-used, gently used from older individuals, battery-operated different tool lines so that I have more than one ecosystem.
Oh, sure.
On Facebook Marketplace. But I look, I'm very specific about my Facebook Marketplacing where I'm like, I can look at your posts and it's got a lot of stuff that's not on there. Mm-hmm. And it also has a lot of just family, I take care of my stuff posts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're the person I'm buying from, like, yep, for sure. Or the person I'm selling to, right? I don't want to get there with the Civic and be like, are they actually showing up or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just sold the car. And
was that on Facebook Marketplace?
And it was the same way. It was just like, I vetted the 300 messages.
You know, I bought our motorhome on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not true. I bought it in a person-to-person transaction involving a lot of cash.
Yes.
But, yeah. But the, you know, that interaction was facilitated by Facebook Marketplace. And that's when I was like, okay, this was years ago.
Right.
And I was kind of converted. Because I'm like an old school Craigslist dude. I used to buy musical instruments on Craigslist and stuff like that. Now Craigslist is where you just go buy drugs and get stabbed. But
true.
Facebook Marketplace where it's at. And it's, that's the only vehicle I've bought so far. But like, I'm always looking.
Yeah.
And Facebook knows it too, because it's all it shows me.
Yeah.
I bought a motorhome a million years ago, but I still pop on and it's like, yo dog, did you see this Suzuki Samurai?
Yeah, exactly.
Four wheel drive.
Yeah, I know. I love it.
It's in 1988. I'm like, oh shit.
The thing, so I'm gonna now hard rail us back to angle grinder, because the thing is that I've got my first angle grinder that I got last year when DIYing, and I got a Harbor Freight because I was like, I want one.
I'm typically
a fan
of Harbor Freight, specifically the Porter Cable brand.
Yes,
at Harbor Freight,
but it is
all my air tools are Porter Cable. They're great.
It is definitely my prototyping. Like that's what I do. Is I go Harbor Freight, I buy something, and I prototype, and then I do research. Like I'm not going to do my research before, right? Like I don't know how good I'm going to do. I don't know how well I'm going to be. There are a lot of tools that I'm not very good at using. Like I'm just not.
This is, you know, I've got this kind of working model I'm developing, which is that tech behemoths destroy everything that they touch. Eventually, it just gets cannibalized. Mm-hmm. So Google fucking ruined the internet. Now you can't search for anything, which is ironic because they revolutionized search, made it possible. And now because of SEO and people trying to game Google, the entirety of the internet is like a blog post written by a 19-year-old intern that's like, Wikipedia defines angle grinding as, if you want to go research angle grind. So now we go to YouTube,
because
it's the only place you can actually find real information. That's my search engine now.
Yep.
And I think that Amazon ruined retail, doing the same shit, because now everyone's gamed Amazon to win the buy box, and like, it's all knockoff plastic shit that's broken. And you like the real brand is selling on Amazon.
Yeah.
You just can't find it, you know?
No, for real.
And like, you know, I can, and a savvy person can, but your grandma can't. And so they're just getting scammed left and right. But yeah, that's one of the reasons why I'm having this sort of renaissance of actual physical retail. Maybe it's just like coming down off all the COVID shit.
Right.
Where, you know, we just had, you know, we had times when like a FedEx truck, an Amazon van, and a UPS truck were all in our driveway at the same time, and we're like in the house going like, oh shit, it's gonna be a turf war. You know, like there's gonna be blood drawn.
Yep, yep.
And now I'm like, I'm just tired of buying shit online, because I'm like, I don't even know if I'm gonna get something real or if it's gonna be broken or whatever. And so Harbor Freight is like, I know it's not going to be a good tool.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it's going to be an actual real tool.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
it's not, exactly. I'm not going to get it and be like, this is fucking plastic and it's going to break, you know?
Exactly.
So I think that's a good point. You can walk into Harbor Freight sight unseen and just buy literally anything off the shelf and be like, it's going to work. And 6 months from now, if I'm still using this tool, I'm going to want a better one. But like, I'm not going to get home and be like, well, this won't do the job, you know?
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I've been, I have discovered that methodology for all of my home stuff. And the first place I did it was I was trying to fix my own HVAC unit, which you should not ever do. And I know, and everyone told me not to. And I said, great, I'm going to learn that lesson the hard way because I'm me. And then I tore my HVAC apart with an angle grinder, and it was so good. Like, it was so easy to do what I wanted to do and destroy the HVAC as quickly as anybody could have ever asked me. I tried to use 10 stems for, I mean, like, there was like, because I worked on that for 3 months, right? And so I the first month of it was me trying to use tin snips and screws and undoing stuff. And then like I got that angle grinder, and within like 24 hours, that thing was just in pieces everywhere. And I was like, oh,
yep,
great. That's exactly what I wanted. Now I'm going to rebuild it. And then that, you know, 1 month, then, you know, a day of angle grinder, and then a month and a half of me trying to rebuild it before it was like, okay, now we buy a new HVAC.
Now that I have an angle grinder, I'm that much closer to buying one of these old pieces of shit cars that Facebook Marketplace right. puts in front of me.
That's true, you know what I mean? Right? Yeah.
That's like the first thing I'm going to need to do is at least put like a wire brush on it and go de-rust it or something like
that. Yeah, exactly, right? So
I was thinking about this just now, and I think that in my code writing, for whatever reason, the last, call it 6 months, when I've written code, it's tended to be front-end code. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's just worked out that way. I don't write that much code, but when I do, it's usually not. But lately, it has been. And I just, JavaScript, man. It's
your favorite.
It's my favorite. Not at all. And so lately, I've been writing a bunch of Python code again, you know, getting back in some. And honestly, thinking about it right now, it's kind of the Amazon versus like actual retail store thing. Because when you go to like do something in JavaScript and you install some library or some module and you're trying to sort out versioning, it's like buying something off of Amazon. And you're like, this might be the real thing. It also might be some weird knockoff that like the IP got stolen in a factory and, you know, now they're making it across the street. And then going back to Python is just like, yes, real parts real made of steel. You can feel the weight to it, you know. Makes me happy.
That's awesome. That's good stuff right there.
So what are we talking about today?
Today, we want to talk, well, data.
Okay.
That's the headline. It's actually really not even data, right? It's the real discussion topic is sifting through information.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing what's valuable. And the question that comes to mind is, do we actually need to save all the data?
All the data, everything that happens?
Yeah, yeah, that's the question. So headline is data sifting through, you know, do we actually save it all?
I think you on the product side have talked to enough clients, right, who come to the table with an opinion on this and what they tend to think. What do they tend to think?
It's always a yes, save it all. Everything. Gotta have it forever and always.
Yep.
And we can never store it in a place that we might have to wait 24 hours to get it. We need it tomorrow or yesterday, as soon as we do need it.
Yep.
So that kind of high availability, extreme high availability too, right? Like
Glacier
storage is still like 72 hours, right? I mean, like
you put. I don't know. You know why I don't know?
Because no one ever will let you put anything
there. No, we have put stuff in it.
Yeah.
But even then, we still didn't need it.
Never
had to pull something out. You know?
It's just
it's deep Encino Man data somewhere it's like in a hard drive in a wooden box somewhere at Amazon, you know? That is what people tend to say. I think that, obviously based on our tone of voice here, the answer is no.
Yeah.
They're not right. But I think that obviously it depends on your use case.
Right.
And I think for very simple use cases, you can just store every piece of data you get your hands on because why not?
Yep.
And it doesn't make it the right answer. I just don't think there's a consequence.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Not a substantial one.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, the minute you start working with actual like true volumes of like large scale data, you immediately have to start being very deliberate and judicious, maybe. You have to make an editorial judgment call. I don't know, like it. Yeah,
the perspective most people are coming to us with, and the perspective that we even assume on almost every decision we make is the risk versus reward perspective. Like, or angle
it's almost
side,
like,
however you want to say,
it's like
right?
FOMO kind of, right? The risk is like, oh, but what if I want that data later?
Yeah, what if I need it? And but that's why
this is both like a half-ass Aziz Ansari. But what if I need that data later? Oh my God.
It's like, but the perspective I want to take, I've been like thinking about more is how much effort do we put in to finding the information that we need once we have all of it, right? Like,
yeah.
Are you?
Well, yeah, because what ends up happening is, like I said, you put it in Glacier storage, it never comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing that I hear people say all the time, which is rooted in truth, which is that like, storage is cheap. And like relative, like anyone that's, you know, been playing the game long enough, it is cheap.
Yeah.
Right? It's unlike, you know, it's unlike commodities that are limited in, you get it.
Yes.
Storage capacity is going up rapidly. I'm just trying to tie it back to economics. You know, like the price of land is never going to go down.
Right.
Unless
right.
you discover it's a super fun site. Like it just goes up.
Right.
But like the cost of storage actually just goes down. Moore's Law, probably.
Okay.
And so that is true. It's cheaper than it ever has been, and it's always going to be that case. What people don't think about in the cost of storing all that data is the cost to retrieve it.
Yes.
In like resources and manpower, the cost of what it potentially does to scale in like database applications, for example, where you like start having a lot of performance problems because you need to find that particular set of needles in this particularly large stacks, haystacks that really don't need to be there. And you could just have each needle in a nice little drawer that's really easy to find. And then that's the last thing is the kind of organization part of it that's really intangible and hard to think about. But I feel like this is the one that you and I are closest to lately.
Yep.
Is just the mental load portion of it. When every desk in the office is piled sky high with paperwork and you're just trying to find the only actual important piece of information in the room,
yep.
it's a mental overload. Obviously, code has no problem with that. But when you have, we're dealing in a scenario where you have code that needs to access this data, but you also need human beings too, because it's in a data science
yep.
analytical application, right? And so it needs to be human grokkable and human findable, but it also needs to be machine grokkable and machine findable. And when there's just noise everywhere, the developers are like, what is all this? What do you mean we have to, why are we parsing the file path to get metadata about this file, you know? And then the data scientists are like, why'd you take the metadata out of the file path? I can't find it anymore. You know, it's just like, damn it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, can't we all just mutually agree that we don't need the same metadata in the file path 17 fucking times? But like, it's a clutter problem.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
And honestly, that can become very cumbersome when you look at it at scale with a lot of different files in a large, not like a file system. I just mean like an operational system of a company, of an organization.
Yes. Yeah.
It compounds.
There's an identifiable analog for every individual engineer, administrator, or in the C-suite, right? Which is a Slack or an email, right? Mm-hmm, it's like, it's the same thing. Yes, you can store all of your email forever now. That's what Gmail taught us.
It's cheap. Storage is cheap.
We can do that. But then
I haven't run it out yet.
But then you try to find the message that has the PDF attachment of the last signature on the document that you need while you're standing in line at the DMV. And guess what? It's nowhere.
By the way, it's everywhere. If you need a better example that Google knows they ruined the internet and that their search is unusable, go trying using search in Gmail.
Yeah.
Which will show you that the king of search has actually been asleep at the wheel for 10 years. They're like, oh, yeah, we don't touch the search thing anymore. No, it's just sitting back there. Yep. Yeah. No, it turns out it's all just mom bloggers.
What's underneath? It's another mom blogger.
Yeah, totally.
It's mom bloggers all the way down. So,
if you've ever Googled a recipe, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, God, it's so bad, right? It's so bad that there's a solution to that problem now that is like
jump to recipe.
Like I clicked on recipe.
They're like, look,
jump to recipe.
To me it feels like a sort of a cry for help
yeah.
from the author. That's like, look, I know. Like, to my true readers, yes. I couldn't in good consciousness make you wade through this minefield of fucking plug-in ads and Taboola chum buckets videos and pop-unders and pop-overs, and there's a thing that slides out from the top and a thing that slides up from the bottom, so that, like, you've paid $1,200 for a 6-inch tall phone, but you still only have one vertical inch of reading space. And you're just trying to figure out how much sugar you put in bread pudding, and it was the summer of 1996, you know,
like the first time I made.
Why are you eating bread pudding in summer?
Because it's so good with ice cream, Casey.
You would. you would.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh boy. So, that's a throwback. Anyway, Google search for email sucks.
Yeah,
it's hard to find it. Yeah, you know, I've had a very similar complaint about Slack. And like findability and stuff like that. I hate Slack. I don't hate it. I use it every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I would do without it. But it's one of those things that you need, but you also can't stand.
Right, right.
You know, like just a really annoying sibling or something. And like it's where communication actually goes to die. But like it's important to be able to communicate peer to peer, right? We've probably talked about this on the show before. But like, it becomes this bucket where people just like throw communication into the ether. And then you get to like hide behind this assumption that everyone saw it.
Right, right.
Right, which is like, you know damn well isn't true. Right, but then someone's like, hey, I never got an update on whatever. And they're like, I posted it. I posted it in Slack.
I said Aziz Ansari says. I said to ask questions.
It's out there. And you're just like, damn it. No, because you know that it was a minute was gone. It scrolled by forever. There was a competitor to Slack. I can't remember which one. I don't even know if it's still a thing. And I'm sure that there's one like it. But it embraced the notion of threads. Like Slack has threads. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest. Slack threads is just Slack in your Slack. It's another thing. This was more like every message in a Slack channel. Imagine that as like the topic on an old school like bulletin board.
Yeah.
V-Bulletin, you know, or whatever. PHP. What was the PHP one?
I don't know.
Did you ever run a forum?
I never ran one. I just joined IRC Slack.
Okay.
There are IRC chats all the time. That's what I did.
So Slack is to IRC where what I'm talking about is to a bulletin board or BBS, something like that, where someone would post a message, but that would be a topic. And then like, you know, in any given moment in a channel, like say a channel for a team or a team or a project or a product or whatever, you have multiple discussions going on simultaneously. At the top level, you see them all and which one was updated most recently, and you can go back to it in the conversation scope. You can kind of do it with threads, except not really, because threads in Slack are just the parent message and a little icon next to it that says two replies or whatever, instead of like topic name, most recent reply, a date of when it was updated, and some indication, like a stronger indication the thread was updated. Anyway, data goes to die in situations like that. You know, this is, I will say also, though, this is like one of the problems I really have been enjoying solving the most in our work, because it provides such an intense value, like when we're helping a team through software, like sort out what to keep and what not to keep, particularly because we work a lot with data science teams.
Right, right.
And the a data science team that is not in the business of like ML ops or data science ops, like operationalizing, if they're on the experimental side, there is a tendency to want to retain data because they're doing analysis of the work that they're doing. In fact, like, you know, as soon as things move out of a Jupyter notebook and they run a script and you don't have visibility to all the intermediate steps, it's like always code that's just like spitting out plots or spitting out intermediate data frames or CSVs or something, right, that lets them go back and have some introspection into what was happening in the code while it was running so that they can analyze their work in a multi-step process, which totally makes sense. It doesn't make sense the minute that goes to production and then you just start spewing these files out.
Right.
And it's a double problem. One is like all the stuff we just talked about the overload of data, the mental load, the storage cost, how to navigate it. But also then, because it's happening, you will have other people that then like enshrine some of that weird side output data, right, and all of a sudden build like a new process in the pipeline that is now dependent on this CSV that gets kicked out of this thing.
Yep.
And the amount of code that I've worked on this year that like calls, it's like a Python. We got Python people listen, so you get it. It's like a Python main function, right?
Right.
That calls three more functions. And each function writes a file to disk, and then the next function reads that file from disk. And it's just like, what the fuck am I looking at? You open up and you're like, they're using the file system as memory. Why? And the answer is because they wanted to see that state of the output. Mm-hmm. And so they logged it to disk so they could see it. The problem is that the next person came in and was like, oh, cool, the file I need is already here on disk. I'll just read that in.
Yep.
And then you just end up, I mean, seriously, after time and like unmaintained, this Rube Goldberg device of files and files here and third part. And then like someone taught people how to write files to S3. Mm-hmm. And so now the files are going to the cloud. Yep. Now, like, local machines are using S3 as, like, shared memory, which, like, kind of can work, but it's, you know, you get it.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it can, like, scatter really quickly. Helping people sort that out is actually really fun, I think.
Right. Yeah, it is fun, and it's also...
It's rewarding. That's the word. It's yes. actually maybe not fun not always. Fun. It just depends on
tedious
what you're doing.
Tedious actually is more what it is,
but
it is. It
can be, right? There's some fun parts in this particular...
But the reward is,
I'm thinking of a specific example, and there have been some fun parts and some not fun parts, but it has been very rewarding to watch people go like, oh, wow, you know?
Yeah.
And to clean it up. It's just like organizing a pantry or something.
Right.
You get done, you're like, yes.
Yeah.
Now I can find that shit.
Now all the things are there.
But the oregano is on the shelf labeled oregano.
It's also part of the... It having gone wrong is actually part of the mechanism for training people how to do it the right way, right?
Like, yeah.
You get to say, like, hey, this is the right way.
Yeah.
Now that you can see it, do you see how much better it is? And they go and like...
It's the pain that you can draw upon.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Like, man, I hate it. And that, Well, there's a good reason for that.
And so one of the things that we do often and help people with in these same scenarios is kind of showing people that as long as the code that you're running is deterministic, which in most cases it is. In a data science context, maybe it's not, right? So deterministic, I mean, you give it the same inputs, you get the exact same outputs every single time.
Right.
2+2, deterministic. Right. You know, the results of a computer vision operation, you know, neural network operation, like things like that, maybe are not deterministic. Maybe you get a slightly different answer every time.
Right.
Those things, I'm going to put those aside. If the answer is deterministic, most of the time, you don't have to store all the outputs. You can just store the inputs.
Right.
And if you need to produce the outputs, you just produce them again. Because while storage may be cheap, we also have most of our CPUs sitting idle all the time in like a processing pipeline. It's like, no, man, just like go read the data in and produce the plot again and print it out to the screen. Like you don't have to store a screenshot of the plot too.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And that retrieval process... If it's stored, that retrieval process, while data is cheap, that retrieval process for trying to find and navigate can be more costly, both on the human resource to find the thing that was stored and or hitting, you know, having to go and find multiple files, right? So the
or
actual
the error on portion this, of it. Or the error. I mean? Like there's, the error portion is really big. Like I thought I was looking at the right chart, but I had three charts open.
Correct. It's like, and so there's just so many...
That's why I got yelled. That's why I got yelled at for taking the metadata out of the file name. How will I know which one it is? I'm like, why are you opening it?
Right.
Let the computer do it.
Yeah. And so that's one piece of it. There's another piece of it that I think is a better. Well, from my product hat, right? I am not as I don't have as much depth technically as the engineers in this room and. Most rooms. And so what I would say, though, where there's a lot of value in is we're talking about data storage, right? But we've got processes where we store the actual code repositories and then retrieve and run those and use those. And that storage itself, Git is like, has been, you know, GitHub has been the way that that's been solved for a long time, right? That's just what people use. Well, now, I guess, you know, there's also other ones, but
plenty.
There's plenty.
There's definitely some GitLab people listening to the show going just like, corporate.
Yeah, exactly, right now. But my point is that
corporate shill.
A solution. But it still has rules that, and you can do that wrong too, right?
Totally. Like,
and that's the thing.
Or
that
you
I
can
find...
also not use it in the same way.
Correct.
Commenting out code in the middle, that's also something that happens a lot in this data right. science code. It's just like, why'd you comment that out in case I need it later? And it's like, we have a record of every line of code that was ever written. It you can't get rid of it.
You can't.
Getting rid of it creates a record that you got rid of it.
Yes, exactly. So I just, you know, I know that's not the same. I'm not as data storage. Code storage is not the same necessarily as data storage, but it is ultimately store data yep. that is stored.
Yep.
And that piece of it is a part that I find very rewarding for us as well, especially working with data scientists as much as we do, because there is such, there's so much in this field, and you can, you know, no one can be the omnipresence of knowing everything about software engineering, right?
Sure.
We just have decades of experience of it, and that's what gets us to know it well enough to say this is the right way and this is the best way, right? And I just find it very rewarding to watch people do things that are way smarter than what I can do, the mm-hmm. data scientists.
Yeah.
And then say, okay, you just don't know about this methodology that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how we store it in a way that makes it real easy. Like you said, we yeah. don't have to comment that out.
No.
We just get a different branch later.
Yes.
And that's really rewarding as well.
Always there. And, you know, when it comes to like this idea of, you know, store the inputs, regenerate the outputs.
Right, right.
This is really cool because I had this like click for someone I was working with the other day because it was like, okay, look, now all the inputs you need to, like all the information you need is stored. And if you want to see the plot, we just pull the information and we replot it. We don't have to store the yep. literally a PNG of the plot somewhere. And they were like, okay, cool. I don't really see the value in it because I've already generated all the plots for this. And it's like, yeah, but you never have to do that again. For all the new things that you do, there is no step to generate it. It just works. And they're like, oh, okay. I guess that saves me a little bit of time. And I'm like, you're still not quite getting it. Because the next thing that happens is there's this like side door that opens up for like, you don't have to be sitting at the terminal, right? We have code that generates the thing
yep.
and all the things are stored. And then I put up a dashboard that was like, the minute you run your script, like you have now this UI that lets you look at everything and everything's it's not pre-generated. It's just running it. And yeah. it was just like, oh, and it was like, well, I didn't generate that artifact for all the past ones. And I'm like, yeah, but those all show up too because they're all being generated at runtime. It's like, oh, and there's no backfilling and stuff like that. And like it really starts to click. And then you get to like, that is a cool thing is when you are able to rely on generating some of your outputs at runtime, letting the code be code, you get the opportunity to build application features that you otherwise wouldn't.
Right.
Right. Yep. Because you can basically everywhere you enter, anytime you insert a step, that's usually a fork where you can, you know, add on. Right.
Right.
And so what I mean is like, if there's code that like takes inputs and the output is a photo, if you add the intermediate step of recording the data that actually generates the photo, now you can have an API that spits that data out.
Right.
And you can still pull that data down and generate a photo, or yeah. you can put a web UI on it and have the photo in it
right.
or whatever. Right. And so it creates opportunities for more product features, but also it creates like this forward look. You can go change the code that generates the image, right? And go like, oh, we had a bug. And like actually in the plot that got generated, you know, one of the axes was off or something like that. And
right.
it's like, okay, well, you just go change the code. Now when you go look at it again, it's fixed.
It's fixed.
You yeah. don't have to, because this is how the data science kind of mindset works, was like, ah, I changed that. I need to go back and rerun all of the experiments with the new generation, because basically all of the artifacts that got spit out the side are stale. Right. They're not, you can't change the logic. It doesn't reinform the artifact. It just simply has to be regenerated over and over.
Right.
Which is not any different than what's happening in a system where it's being generated at runtime. You just don't have to manually go through the process of stepping through and doing it and spinning it all out.
Yeah.
And like, ultimately, if there's no better use case, is that when all this shit goes to production anyway, and you might want to pull up some scatter plot that tells you something about one particular project of all the projects, because you're debugging an error or you're trying to improve upon your process. Generating everything in advance, not particularly useful in a world where you might need to see the outputs of any one thing, but you're only going to ever actually look at less than 1% of them.
Right.
Yeah. So just generate when you need it. Now, there are flip sides to that. Pre-warming caches in web development has been a thing for a long time. You just make a decision about a trade-off.
Right.
Is there value in pre-generating this and storing it so it doesn't have to be computed at runtime?
Right.
If the runtime computation is particularly expensive, for example.
Right.
There's plenty of stuff in that same project that I'm talking about that takes 6 hours on a GPU to run. Let's store the output.
Write it down.
Let's not do that again. But I guess that what I'm saying is, in that world, I think it's really common for people to see all of those problems as identical.
Yeah.
It took 6 hours to generate this and it took 6 milliseconds to generate this. Same approach.
Right.
Used. And again, I'm not saying don't put a paper on your desk, because if it's the really important paper that needs to be on the desk, that's great. It's really hard to find that paper when there's 10 million other papers on the desk.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this does it goes back to the initial consideration that had me thinking about this, which was we were talking about some of the next steps in building out some dashboards.
Mm-hmm.
And dashboards have traditionally been kind of painful to build out, not because the dashboard is hard to build out, but because of product. It's product people, mm-hmm. not like as in they do a bad job. But
so it's your fault.
Yeah, it's my fault. Because we have to get definition from a client on what is useful information to show. And honestly, it's like, well, everything, of course, always. Like I said, the same thing, right? We store all the data. Also, we need to see all of it all the time. And that's where dashboards have been painful, but that's why we like some of the low-code tools that we're using, because now we can just go like, the reality is, again, I love prototyping. I mean, this is my soapbox right now. It's just that everything in my life is prototyped. It's just like, I want everything to go, oh, I think I want an angle grinder. I'm going to buy the cheap one. I'm going to try it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. In the same way that I'm going like, I want a dashboard that I need somebody to see and just tell me no. Like, I'm going to put the wrong stuff on there intentionally. Mm-hmm. I just want you to tell me no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want you to give me a yes or a no and to tell me no.
That's
you
a great
don't
way
need everything.
Yeah, and then be like, all right, well, maybe not everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, cool. Right. Now that there's a crack in your armor that I will now exploit.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. There was a product we worked on a long time ago. Client we have for a long time. So.
I know. Yeah,
It was before your time.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going back to the beginning of my time. I was like, because there's a lot of.
I don't know.
I
think they're defunct now. Were you around with Mondabrain? I don't think
so.
Oh
no. Right? Yeah.
So Mondabrain was a unique machine learning.
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, it was a proprietary algorithm. Mm-hmm. It was a whole bunch of algorithms together, but it was actually really good at what it did. But the CEO was a Parisian, and he was very hard-headed. He was a PhD mathematician.
Yep.
You couldn't talk him out of anything.
Yep.
He his hands were on the controls of every aspect of that product. Mm-hmm. He wasn't terribly bad at it, but he was hard to work with in some cases. And I remember picking a fight with him that I lost over a Django admin screen which was, I think it was like a list of all of the runs of the machine learning job.
Yeah.
Like a list of them.
Yeah.
Of like who the client was and how many rows went in and yeah. like just some like summary aggregates about the results. And it was like we were blowing up Django admin because we were just putting all this information in this table. And I was like, we just need, we're going to get rid of this. And he was just like, absolutely not. He's, in fact, he was like, it was paginated like 100 rows. And he was like, there needs to be 1,000. I need to see 1,000. And I was like, his name was Augustine. I was like, Augustine, what would you even do with 1,000 rows mm-hmm. with your eyes?
Yeah,
right? Because this isn't a CSV.
Right.
This isn't an Excel sheet where you could take that and do something with it. It is an HTML table. And,
yep.
and like the only beneficiary of me putting 1,000 things in this table is your fucking eyeballs.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yep.
What would you even do with it?
With it.
Like, what can you do with 1,000 rows of information in chronological order?
If you have a PhD in mathematics, your brain...
No, he can't. I know, right? No, his brain can't. His brain can't look at that. Like,
no one
what
can.
Are you coming to this table for?
Yes.
You're looking at the most recent one.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Like, yep. who run what? Or you're, like, scanning the table regularly, but you're not scanning all 1,000 rows. Anyway, that was a perfect example.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if you got... Because that's what he was trying to do. He was, like, keeping eyes on his customers.
Yep.
And being like, I want to see when someone's running a lot of jobs or running the same job over and over again because we want to get in front of it. It's a customer success problem. Maybe they're struggling,
yeah. yep.
right?
Yep.
And it's an opportunity for us to sell some training services or whatever. I get it. But like most dashboards, it was like, okay, there's a better way. What is the problem that you are scanning this table for? Because if you want me to build you a dashboard that shows you every time someone's run the same job 3 times in a row, I can do that. And it will only show you one record.
Yes.
And it will be the one that you want.
The one that you need to contact
right
now.
And he didn't want a dashboard. And I was just like, tell you what, I know how this guy works. I was like, we'll email it to you. We'll send you an email alert when that happens.
And
he was like,
yes.
He was like, okay, that's a good idea. Have it email me every time someone runs a solve job. And I was like, no, you've just moved the problem into your inbox.
Yes.
And it's like, that's even worse, Augustine. Yeah. What are you going to do with 1,000 emails?
Right, right, right.
It's not even a table. And he was just like, just put all the information in the subject line. I was like, you just turned Gmail into an HTML table for your
yep.
benefit.
Yep.
I couldn't talk him out of it. I'm pretty sure we ended up like, you know, I chose the lesser of 10 evils and was like, okay. We'll paginate it to 1,000 rows, you crazy bastard.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, man.
Actually, I think we did start sending the emails, and we got an email from him that was like, you guys got to stop with all these emails.
Which sounds right.
Yeah.
That's only...
You've worked with customers.
Yep. That's only the every customer.
Well, this is a perfect example. I need to see everything. I need to see everything always.
Everything always.
Honestly, I think it's kind of lazy. I can't say that straight to the client's face when someone's like, we need to put everything. And I was just like, you are not taking the time to think about it.
Right.
And maybe thinking about it stresses you out because you don't know the answer. So you're like, I just write it all down. We just don't know what we're going to need. You can hear the stress coming out.
Yeah.
It's just like, maybe take an hour and think about it, though.
Here's the other thing. And maybe I'm a jerk. People don't know how.
Right?
Yeah. Like, they just don't know how to think about it.
Yeah.
They don't, not just... And I'm going to take this away from our clients. I'm humans in human life.
Yeah.
Don't know anymore.
If you're a client, we're not talking about you.
Yeah, we're talking
probably.
About the unless you text while you drive, and then we're talking about you.
No, we got rid of that client.
But that's like, it's that type of thing. Like, they don't literally do not, people do have not been taught how to think about things, and they literally do not understand that texting while driving is bad for them, like that mm-hmm. type of thing. That's, yep. I mean, like, I don't remember. How many times a week this happens to me that I'm driving behind someone and I'm like, I'm gonna ride up on you because you're being an idiot. Oh, I'm so, and I was like, don't do that. You're being dumb. Don't be that person. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I'm just like, I chill and I pass them and I'm like, they're on their phone. Like, they didn't even have an idea I was riding their tail.
Yeah.
They didn't even know that. They were being a jerk and other people were being jerks back to them because they're just so oblivious
falling on deaf ears. Yeah.
Like, and it's like,
not only did I not need to get frustrated, like, it doesn't do any good that I do. Like, my action, my mechanism for feeling better about this actually only makes things more dangerous because that person still doesn't know. Yeah. I need to find a different way.
That person is still oblivious.
Yes, exactly.
And you just, now you're closer to them at a higher velocity. Yes. or a higher speed differential.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's true. I think you're right. I think people don't know how to think of it. I think people don't know how to structure strategic thought.
And that was the word period. Yes, correct. It's about the structure. And I mean, we had a podcast that I failed to record
I was on that one.
Yeah, where we attempted to record that I had not emptied the SD card. Good job, Joseph.
He's so adamant about not storing too much data.
That
he didn't store any of the data from that one. But, well, we do have to have the inputs to generate the outputs. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
But about the rules of a thing, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. people, there was a rules part one and there was a rules part two. We never ended up getting to rules part two, but we will sometime, I hope. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, but both of them, to me, the idea that was being generated to start the podcast content on that was, it's not just rules, it's sets of rules, right? And mm-hmm. there are sets of rules for everything.
Oh yeah.
And the sets of rules for strategic thought, the structure of the sets of rules for structured thought is actually really difficult for lots of people, not because they are not capable, but because no one ever gave them
the tools.
The tools for the sets of rules for it. And that's oftentimes, I feel, what we are doing in like our discovery process. We sit down and say, this is the set of rules by which you are going to operate for the next 2 hours.
Most of us are doers.
Yeah.
Right? We've got a part to play. We've got lines that we read. We've got a tool that we know how to use. We've got angles to grind.
Yep. Overhead.
Yes. On a ladder. If put it another way, if everyone was sitting around the strategy table, it would be chaos, right? As a result, there are people who are really good at strategy because they've gotten the reps, right?
Yep.
Not because they're in, I mean, maybe there's some inherent, some people are better at some things.
Yeah. They grew up in an environment
I'm not saying they're naturally better, but I do think that people are predisposed to it through their experiences. It would be chaos if everyone's sitting around the strategy table, so they don't. Most people aren't. Right. There's a lot less generals than there are infantry.
Yep.
Right. No matter where you sit in this scale, you should be able to see this. Point is that it takes effort to change your brain from tactics to strategy.
Yes. Yep.
Right. Two very different things because we see it constantly. A good example of this is what do you need to see on this dashboard? And the answer is store everything. And it's I just asked you a strategic question.
Right.
And you just responded with a tactic.
Yep.
Right? Where are we going to deploy the troops?
Yep.
To the front lines, and we're going to shoot people. Oh, sorry, you came to the wrong table.
Yes, correct.
Your table's out over there, you know.
Thank you, Major.
Yes, yes. it's not intuitive.
Yep.
And I when we do our strategic work, it's not intuitive to us. We had to come up with a system, methodology. We're engineers.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's all right, we have to build the rules.
Yep.
And we have to build the flow chart, right, of how we drive through this. We take this very, because strategy is way more arts and creative than it is math.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But just like most things, the hardest part is it's not. Some people can think strategically, but never come to an outcome. Right.
Right.
That's
right.
Where most people fail. Right. Is they come in, and even if you can get into some strategic thinking and brainstorming, ideating, you get stuck in this infinite loop of just churning up ideas and never able to reach any consensus.
Yeah.
And that's the part where it's all right, we got to build the rules of the traffic system. You
correct.
Know what I mean?
Yep.
There has to be a destination that you arrive at. Again, not intuitive. We use workshops to this end.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be workshops, but workshops are highly effective ways of doing it.
Yeah.
And it's something that we have to do. If no one lifts their head up to tie it back,
from writing the code that generates all the data to have a strategic conversation, right? Again, same thing happens in this context between, like, say, a data scientist and a software engineer, or two software engineers, whatever, of like, hey, I think we need to come up with a different way of storing this information, right? Which is this is a strategy problem.
Right.
Like, yep. We need to come up, they might not say it, but they're thinking strategically. Like, we need to think about how we do this.
Yep.
And then the other person is like busy, heads down, doer, is like, okay, let's put it in a database. Starts responding with tactics.
Yep.
Super, super common. And we don't tend to workshop this side as much, but what we do end up doing is like flowcharting it out.
Yeah.
And this ties all the way back to my feelings on communication and, you know, my hatred of Slack, because like solving problems like this, you can't solve it in Slack.
Yeah.
Right. It's just everyone shooting from the hip. Best answer you got right now, because if I come back in an hour, the conversation will have shifted somewhere else.
Yep.
Like, that's not how real ideas get done. Like, real ideas historically have been generated by people taking the time to sit and think and then write it out.
Yep.
Long form written communication.
Right.
Like the Constitution of the United States was not written by like people tweeting at each other. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like this and this. Well, what about, you know, it was like people sitting and writing out. Like if you haven't read like the letters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of just like how long it went, and people just opining for 25 pages about, because in the process of doing so, they're editing it and they're refining their philosophy and they're coming to a better point and they're coming to a better realization. And they're also going like realizing they've tied themselves in a pretzel and they're like, actually, no, that's not erase. You know,
yeah, right.
You don't erase things in Slack. You might go, hey, never mind. But like, you know, someone only sees part one and not part two.
Correct.
You get my point. I think that workshopping can be the same way, to like get people in a room and do that together and do the brainstorming part. But like a lot of times when it comes to like technical strategy of like figuring out a data architecture, or an approach, I find works best when like whoever like has a really strong kind of opinion that there's a problem and sees a potential solution actually fully diagrams it out and comes back and says, all right, everyone, here's an architecture, here's a flow chart, here's the rationale, here's the case why. And it's not like who has questions, right? I guess you can ask that if some jump out. The idea is like, okay, now take this and think about it.
Right.
Don't answer right now.
Yeah.
This isn't like a you speak now or forever hold your peace, because you need time to process this and think about it and come back. Like, and preferably write something down when you do it, you know?
This is where I will put down a strong opinion about product.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a product manager, doesn't do that process.
What if I don't write anything down at all ever?
Yeah, exactly.
What if I've never produced a single artifact?
You don't have to do it the way that we just said, but if you don't do that thing,
mm-hmm.
you are a bad product manager.
Bad. Like,
I will say that.
No.
Like, you're not good at what you do. The thing is that as a product manager, what you have to do is meet the team where they are 100%, right? So I know, so over my career, I would say that I can be very fair to say over 50%, and I could probably go higher, but I'm just trying to, you know, minimize any risk of being wrong here, but over 50% of the engineers that I've worked with will not do that without more hand-holding. I can't say, go write something down. I have to say, hey, I need you to have this done by next Tuesday. And I need them usually, depending on the level of trust that I have with that engineer,
mm-hmm.
have to let them fail before I can say, hey, have we done it? And then say, I can't tell you how many of them I have pulled up a board in front of them and said, actually, you don't have to go write it down. let's talk about it, and I'm going to put notes down. I literally did this earlier today.
I observed this, yeah.
And it's not because they're bad. It's like, again, there's a set of rules that people have not been trained on.
It's not intuitive.
And so as a product manager, you got to meet them where they are, but you still have to, you have to put the demand on the human to do it still. And it doesn't matter where you meet them in the process. You can meet them there. But then the next time you do it, it's like, hey, remember when we sat down and did that thing? You just sit down and do that same thing again. And like, you expect more of them the next time. Not that they're fully functional, mm-hmm. but more. That's the process of maturing and developing in a career.
Well, and like, and speaking to an audience of mostly software engineers listening to this show, I mean, that is a career development thing. And yes. for me,
yeah.
it's a big line between someone who is actually a senior software engineer and not. Because you can be a really talented software engineer with a lot of experience and still not meet my standard for senior, and it has nothing to do with your ability to produce code, right?
Yeah.
And you might be able to, like, build things under a good architecture, but the ability to articulate that and strategize that and communicate that with other people on your team and, like, win hearts and minds that you have to, that's part of the career growth, right? Yep. And like that's a thing that's really important. And a thing that I just wish I could get through to people is that, like, being proactive as, like, bringing strategy to the table. It's like, I think people tend to kind of have this a little bit backward. They're like, oh, you know, people get to do strategy because they've moved up into management in their career. And it's like, no. You get to be management because you could do strategy, right? Yep. It goes the other way around, at least in a healthy organization.
Correct.
We all know examples of people who failed upward. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
In a healthy organization, you are given the job because you're capable of doing the job and not the other way around, because a high-performing organization can't afford to do it any other way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And not only that, but it's only responsible to do that to
that's
a person.
That's what I mean, right? Like, they can't. I don't mean that they can't financially afford to, or like it's a risk thing, but like they can't afford to create a culture in which people are not required to rise in that way because that alone would begin to erode their culture of performance, right?
Correct.
And it's just, it's a line in the sand that they're not willing to cross for good reason. And so, I mean, I don't know. Thinking about this, I know this is kind of off the topic of data, but it's not in so much as like figuring out the right way to manage a lot of data is actually a strategic problem. So I'll button this all up together. And if you haven't taken the time to figure out how to strategize about that, amongst your team or alone, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's just a huge growth unlock for your potential.
Right. And this takes 5 minutes a week at a start, right?
You're about to sell a class or something. For just 5 minutes a week. I mean, this is like the price of a cup of coffee.
Yes, that's exactly. Well, that is right. I mean, we do have a Patreon. So,
that's true.
We didn't teach
you to be strategic yet.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
But the patrons will have a workshop with us.
A feature that you're being requested to do and you take 5 minutes as an engineer for this week and you sit down
if you wireframe it out and like document it on the card in whatever hell of a issue tracking system your company uses, they're all bad.
God, that Jira commercial was awesome. Did you ever get to watch it? Did you ever watch that Jira commercial?
No.
We'll have to watch it when we leave here. You have to see it. It is so good. But yes, whatever hell of a system you're using.
Did they like openly acknowledge it's bad and everyone still uses it, so it must not be that bad? That's how I would write that commercial.
It's not like, for Jira, it's for ClickUp.
Oh, okay.
It is just, oh my, it pokes at Jira in all the right places.
It's so good.
But yes, if you do that, it's 5 minutes. I want to say this also, how long have we?
We're closing it out right now.
Okay, yeah, I want to say this. I called out that I've had to, we had to do this training to get engineers to do so, and I was saying over 50% engineers. I would put the number just as high for product managers that I've had to train as well to do the same thing. And and other frontline implementers. Like, it's not just that's not just an engineering thing.
Yeah.
It is. Everyone has to be trained in this set of rules, 100%. And it is very uncommon for anyone. Most of the time,
the people that we're interfacing with that aren't good at this are on the business and product
correct.
Side.
Yes, yeah. Correct, exactly. It's most of the time that. I didn't want it to sound as if we were calling out.
We've been picking on data scientists. That's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, well, no, this was a fun one. And I was thinking about this the other day, and so I told myself when we sat down to record again, I would do it because... I was having a conversation with someone. I've forgotten specifically who it was at this point, but we were talking about doing a project together, and they said, I know someone who listens to your podcast or something like that. And of all the things we do here at Lofty, to market ourselves and generate business, the podcast has consistently been the thing that brings us projects and opportunities that we never expected to.
Right.
This is like one activity we do that was never designed to be business development for us.
Yeah.
And we like it that way. But you know what? It does tend to bring us projects and people, and it's great because we always know that we're going to get a really good client culture fit. And so I will actually, I'm gonna allow these two things to overlap and say, if you're on a team and you got a project you think we might be able to help with it, you should reach out.
Yep.
I think some people may be holding back on that. And I promise it won't ruin what we've got here.
Right.
You can still listen to the show, and maybe we'll be talking about you. no, but seriously, I have to say thanks because like so many people have referred clients to us.
Yeah.
And we've got some holes in our portfolio right now.
So yeah,
if you got something, send it our way. We'd like to talk to you.
And I'm going to say, because we'll cut and we'll go to Patreon content. I don't know why I always call it Patreon. Is it spelled weird? And
it's Patreon.
It is Patreon.
It's not patron. It's patron is the demonym anyway.
Okay.
But it's Patreon.
It's one of the things that in my brain is broken every time I never know the right way. But what I want to say for that is that was only one of the creative things overhead in grinding. I've got another one and I want to tell you about that I'm looking forward to.
Can we change that episode and call it Chainsaw on a Ladder?
Yes, we could. We just ended
it's,
with that.
It's, so. Yeah, it's the same thing, but the stakes are much higher.
It's true.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
That's right.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty in Fayetteville, Arkansas. For show notes from today's show, past episodes, and links to our Patreon and merch store, visit friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to reach out to the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and you'd like to be a guest in person on the show, email us at podcast@hirelofty.com. That's podcast@hirelofty.com. We'll be right back.